it's hard to be humble. You're perfect in every way. Can't wait to look in the mirror. Can't wait to look in the mirror.
Help me out now, come on.
I get better looking each day. To know me is what to know me is to love me.
Must be a hell of a man.
I must be a hell of a man. Oh, Lord, it's hard. Lord, it's hard to be humble.
When you're doing what?
We're doing the best that we can.
Welcome back. We're here on game day on ESPN 95.1 The Fan. Mac Davis, It's Hard to Be Humble, Max Howell's self-proclaimed theme song. We've got Boji Wood on the line. He's our resident odds maker. Boji, is it hard for you to be humble?
It always is. I knew y'all were playing my theme song when I was coming
That's
on.
Right.
You know, me and Max, you know, we've got a copyright on that thing. Nobody can play that but us. But now, hey, now, Sam, now listen, again, and Max knows this, I am not an odds maker. I'm just an ex-coach who happens to be partnered with an odds maker. So everything so
here's what we've determined, though, Boji, in your defense. You've learned to be an odds maker through osmosis. The closer you get to that situation, you know, therefore, you can speak the truth.
And we've got to have one on staff, and you're the closest we got.
And
so.
Max, let me say something about that, is that I really thought that, okay? I thought that I could learn this stuff because, hey, you know, athlete, coach, you learn things. You get that craft in you. Let me tell you, I still don't have it. I'm just going to be honest with you. Those guys out there in Vegas, they see things – I mean, it's a different plane, and so again, every time I think that, oh yeah, I'm kind of getting this and understand why certain things are, you know, why certain teams are favored by this many points and what have you, oh, I get knocked down to size real quick.
I understand. All right, quickly, over the weekend, I'm just going to throw a couple games. Ones I know I was interested in. With Georgia Southern comes away 23-21 over Eastern Michigan in the Camellia Bowl in Montgomery. Valdosta State wins Division II over Ferris. And where is Ferris College? Ferris.
Michigan. Mm-hmm. Michigan.
Boji, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, yeah. Ferris College, Valdosta wins 49-47. Mm-hmm. They win the national championship. I don't know. I don't recognize Ferris. Where is it?
Ferris is in Michigan.
Okay, well, there's a reason.
Yeah. Now again,
coming south to play.
Yeah, I learned.
Of course, North Carolina A&T over Alcorn 24-22 in the Celebration Bowl. I think that was from everything I heard. Might have been a call or two that was questionable, but needless to say, it goes in the record books as is. And of course, we know we had the other Tulane wins big. Utah State beats North Texas, and in Las Vegas, Bowl Fresno beats Arizona State. So we're off and running with our bowl season, Boji.
Yeah, it is. And, of course, SEC, you know, they don't get started until after Christmas with Baylor and Vandy and then Purdue and Auburn. I look at those two games. I think Vanderbilt has played good football throughout the year. They went up to Notre Dame and played Notre Dame toe-to-toe for four quarters, and had a kid been able to hold on to the ball, they possibly could have won that game there at the end. This Auburn team taking on a Purdue team that obviously a huge win over Ohio State during the year. You know, I hope Auburn hadn't bitten off more than they can chew. And as we all know, there's a lot of things going on at Auburn right now.
No doubt. That brings up right now quickly. From the SEC teams, Boji, what you've seen, there are some games in this list that jumps out at me. And I don't want to say more important than other games because everybody – sees their own importance, obviously, to get to a bowl game. But, I thought we'll just talk about a few. The Florida-Michigan game is one I really think is important. I think Texas A&M at North Carolina State, because of Jimbo, they're up and coming right now. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about this morning about Mississippi State and Iowa. And then, of course, LSU in Central Florida, Georgia, and Texas. I think some of these, to me, just jump out, and maybe that's my own prejudice, that I want to see these teams win their particular ball game. But I do think some of them may carry a little more weight nationally when it comes to the conference maybe than some of the others.
Max, I think you're missing one that's going to fit that vein that you're talking about, is Missouri, ranked number 23, taking on Oklahoma State. These two teams were Big 8 conference rivals and then Big 12 conference rivals. And there's a little bit of a slight toward Texas A&M and Missouri for leaving the Big 12 conference and coming to the SEC. And now you've got a chance for Oklahoma State to have even, forget Big 12 pride, going all the way back to Big 8 pride and kind of putting Missouri back in their place.
You know, you go back and look, and again, that's why I really wanted to talk to you today on that, and certainly the Georgia-Texas game jumps out, for, we all know for what reason there. But I think the LSU game, and we talked to some people last week in Baton Rouge about how important it is, and it appears that this game has never been more important. But you've been on staffs that got in preparation for bowl games, and I think it's always been two philosophies. It's one, a team that's pretty well established, and you got the talent level, and you think maybe I'm going to spend the first 2 weeks just prepared for an early spring, and I get a lot of the young guys in there to work for us. Or the other side is a relatively young team coming in. I want to make a mark. I want to go forward with my program for next year. And I think all of that depends on how you practice. We just had a Mississippi State guy on just a moment ago, and he said without a doubt they're going into this ball game. About 75% of their preparation is all about Iowa. They want to win this football game and go forward, you know, with their program for next year. So, as you see games like an LSU in Central Florida, what's your interpretation of LSU and how you think they may prepare?
I think that LSU, they're going into this game almost like it's a national championship game, to be quite frank with you, because I don't think LSU wants to be put in the same box that Auburn was put in last year by Central Florida.
Right.
And I think Coach O has got these guys saying, hey, look, you know, they're coming after us. They came after Auburn. They got Auburn. And Auburn says, you know, oh, well, we really didn't want to be there. We thought we should be in the playoffs, you know, and they lost to Georgia, and they were just all downtrodden and everything. LSU doesn't have that excuse. And again, I think that's BS about Auburn last year. I think they just went in there, wasn't ready to play, and, of course, Kerryon Johnson being hurt didn't help. But Central Florida just beat them. And Central Florida, I don't think they're going to come into this game afraid at all. But I think LSU is going to come into this game with a little bit more hunger and a little bit more fire than Auburn did last year in the Peach Bowl.
You know, you go back and look, and I know we've talked a little bit about Clemson and Notre Dame, and, of course, we won't even talk this week on Alabama yet. But Clemson-Notre Dame, it's about 11-point favor by Clemson. Mm-hmm. I watched Notre Dame the last time they came into a playoff, what they thought was a playoff at that particular time in 2012, and Alabama just handed their head to them. Do you not believe Clemson's going to try to do the same thing to notify the nation that they're legitimate and they're ready for a national championship run?
I think they are. Of course, when you have Trevor Lawrence at that quarterback, this is going to be the first time that he's really been tested. And again, this is anticipation of him being tested, because I think this Notre Dame defense is pretty dang good. And they're used to playing Clemson, you know, but just a few years ago, they went down into Death Valley and lost that game on a failed two-point conversion late in the game in a quagmire there in Clemson. And so Notre Dame, they've still got players on that team that played in that game. They're going to be ready for this offense. However, Max, I don't know how much you've watched Trevor Lawrence, but to me, this is the most talented passing quarterback as a freshman that I can remember. I mean, he makes throws. He's able, because he's tall, he's lean, he can actually roll out to the left as a right-handed quarterback, get his shoulder square, and throw darts on a rollout to the left. Of course, the only time he's really been tested this year, he got knocked out of the game early against Syracuse. And I think this is going to be his first test. I think this Notre Dame defense, I think they're up to the task. I think Clemson will probably win the football game, but I think it'll be more because of their defense sets the table for that offense rather than just the offense runs all over Notre Dame's defense.
All right, let's jump. We're talking defense. Let's jump to the Florida-Michigan game. Sam and I have talked about that. Michigan's coming in with a noted defensive front, for example. We know what Felipe Franks has been trying to stand in the pocket, and word I'm getting out of Gainesville right now that they're going to use Emory Jones to try to get outside, try to get away from the rush with an option or run with a quarterback. Your thoughts about that one?
Michigan played great defense all year long until they got to until they got to Columbus, and that game was that defense. I think Ohio State snowballed that defense. Everything that could go right for Ohio State in that game did go right. Everything that could go wrong for Michigan's defense did go wrong. So don't judge that Michigan defense simply off of that game. But I think that Florida is probably going to be the either second or third best offense that this defense has played. And where they have trouble, Max, where Michigan's defense has trouble, they play so much man coverage, they lock on those corners so much with zero coverage, they have trouble when they can't get to the quarterback. So the key in this game to me is that Florida offensive line. Can they control that front? Can they block 5-on-4, 5-on-5, and not have to keep a back end and help chip on some linemen? Because if they can do that, I think Felipe Franks, I think he can hit a couple of deep ones against this Michigan secondary, because they're real good at covering for about 2.5-3 seconds. Anything after that, man, you've got a chance to make big plays on them.
Well, let's stay on Felipe Franks right there, Boji. We talked about this, Max and I did, early in the show, and I've commented for weeks now that I'm just not sold on Florida's offense. I think their defense has been what has kept them in game so far this year. Why should people like me believe in Felipe Franks in this bowl game?
I'm not sold on Felipe Franks as the answer at Florida. I think probably right now, all around, he gives them the best chance of winning against a defense like Michigan, because I think Florida's going to have trouble running the ball on Michigan, even with a running quarter. If they put a running quarterback in there, I still think they're going to have trouble running the ball on Michigan. I think if Florida beats Michigan, it's going to be because they hit a couple of three deep passes and either score off those passes or sit themselves up in position to score. To me, this is not really about saying, looking into the futures next year, saying who should be playing quarterback at Florida. But I just think in this one game against this type of defense, with the speed that Florida does have on the perimeter, I think that's their best chance of winning the game.
All right, now let's take a step back from actually analyzing individual games to looking at the whole system. Lots of news out there on playoff expansion. What's your position, OG?
It's going to 8, and it should go. I personally think it should go to 16, and you should take the first round and play on the campuses of seeds 1 through 8. But that's, again, that's just me. And you know, I spent a lot of time at 1AA and Division II, and we had that, and, you know, everything seemed to work out okay. But I think 8's a good number. I think 8's better than 4. I think, you know, 4 was better than, first of all, 2 was better than just choosing somebody. And then and 4 is better than 2. And I think 8's going to be better than 4. And it's going to happen. I think they'll set certain criteria for Power 5 conference champions. I think if they're ranked, say, you know, if you're a Power 5 conference champion and you're ranked in the top 12, I think you're going to get in. I think they'll have some type of criteria about that. And then, of course, you'll still have an avenue for Notre Dame to get in, because Notre Dame, even though they play ACC conference schedule, a part of one, they're never going to get into a conference, and I don't blame them. I wouldn't either if with the clout that they have and able to have their own sports network on NBC. You know, they don't need to be in a conference, but it gives them an avenue still to get in. And then also, it would give the Central Floridas that make a run and win 25 straight, it'll give them a chance to get in, and they may get in as the 8th seed, but hey, go play Alabama the first round. You beat them, you're legit.
Obviously, there's going to be a lot of chaos no matter what the number is, and there'll be squabbles about who got in, who was left out. So I don't think that factors into very much of it, but I would ask, Boji, is 8 the number, not just because of roundness, but also it allows you to make sure every conference is represented, it diversifies your portfolio and keeps everybody happy? Is that why we're going with 8?
I think so, because now I can only say what I've heard through the grapevine, that if the Big 12 there, and again, The Big 12, of course, you know, they've been shut out before when they thought that they should have been included. And then and the Pac-12, they feel like that they've got to go undefeated and beat everybody in the world even to get recognized. So I can understand that the majority of the grumblings was coming from there. But, I was told that there were conferences ready to jump ship on this thing if Alabama lost to Georgia in the SEC championship game and then still got in over a one-loss Oklahoma team. And even a one-loss – again, you got to remember when these conversations took place, back when a one-loss Washington State team could have been considered. There were grumblings saying, hey, you don't believe us, we'll walk away from this thing right now and not care. And so I agree with you, Sam. A lot of this has to do with everybody making sure that they have a seat at the table, you know, at least one chair anyway.
You know, you go back and look, we know you pointed out the Big Ten and PAC have been the two teams that have been shut out by the last couple of years, and certainly has a lot to do with the schedule. Here's the argument, though. Part of that is they play 9 ball games in the conference. And, of course, that's going to be one of the, I think, the questions or the sticking points that may come up. I guess the next question is the committee's going to meet right before the Alabama game, before the 29th, I guess on the 28th. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that will be the point of discussion. Mm-hmm. How quick do you think this thing can come about in 2 years probably?
Yeah.
Or you think they're going to continue to argue with it?
Well, we know that they've got one more year of the contract in the current system. And I think right now the Pac-12, they can't argue about they should have had a team in this year because their champion was what, 2 or 3 loss Washington?
Three loss
Washington team. So they don't have an argument this year. Obviously Alabama beating Georgia, Oklahoma winning, everything kind of laid out pretty smoothly for 1 through 4. I mean, I don't think anybody was shocked of the seeds this season. So they've got to maintain that same contract for next year. I think that this thing goes to 8 for the 2020 season because that'll be the first year of the new agreement. And again, the Pac-12, the Big Ten, the Big 12, they're going to have some leverage at that point. When you're already in a contract, unless you just agree to walk away from it and just leave everybody hanging, you don't have any leverage. But in 2020, when they sit down and negotiate the 2020 contract, those conferences will have leverage. But I agree with you, Mac. The SEC, they need to get rid of the cupcake games there at the end of the season. They need to go to 9 conference games.
Bogey, I haven't been around all that long. I just very briefly remember the tail end of the BCS era that ushered this in. My question to you now, in your mind, how does this new system compare with former systems? And the reason that came to my mind is I'm sitting here thinking, well, what if this doesn't work out? What if the playoff format, after a while, we decide it doesn't work? Well, what on earth is there possibly to go to? Because we've tried letting the media decide it. We've tried letting the committee pick 2 teams to just play in the championship. Now we've got a playoff format. And so that led me really to wondering, well, is this the best we've seen or is it the best we can see? What do you think? How does this shape up compared to other methods of determining a champion?
Well, this, as far as Division I goes, this is the best that it's ever been. Again, at least you have 4 teams. Again, I spent a lot of time at 1AA Division II, where we had 16 teams. Now I think they even have 24 teams with some the top seeds getting a bye. I don't like that. I like getting a nice round bracket number that you can work your way through it. But listen, we're never going back to the old way, just like we're never going back to coaches making $100,000 a year. It just ain't happening. And that's head coaches making $100,000 a year. But we're never going back to that. I like this system. I just wish that, again, I'll like it better at 8, and I know it will never get to 16. But one thing about the playoff system, and especially if it goes to 8, the conference championship games, in a lot of ways, are minimized at that point. And that may be the one fallout from all of this, is that we might see, as crazy as it sounds, we might see these conference championships going away. And when I say going away, per se, not necessarily the venues going away, but them hosting the first round of the playoffs and them being able, the highest-ranked team, like, say, in Alabama this year, would have hosted someone in Atlanta. And so we may see the conferences incorporate into the playoffs. But I don't think we'll ever go back to where we have an AP and a UPI champion or a BCS where we're just choosing two. I don't think we'll ever go back there, and I don't think we should.
But we're going to have, though, somewhere, I guess, format that equalizes the conferences play nine as opposed to eight. The independents, i.e. Notre Dame, it just plays 12 games a year, i.e. Central Florida, whomever it may be. There's got to be some, I guess, some equalization there on how you do it. What about a Washington that has three losses if they're a conference champion? Don't you think they need to put a floor on that, saying, hey, you can't have, anything more than two losses and allow that team to get in?
Yeah.
I think that all those questions have to be answered somewhere.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to what I was saying earlier. If you can be a Power 5 conference champion, and as long as you're ranked, say, in the top 12, then you have an automatic bid to get in there. Because I don't think that if you're ranked 12th, if you've got three losses and you're ranked 12th, there's a lot of teams above you that have three losses also. So I think that's one thing. The one thing that I, in speaking to your point of criteria, you know, forget this, oh, we're going to choose the best four teams. That just gives you, the committee, the leverage and to put anybody you want to in. And so, oh, we thought, you know, they're the best. You know, you don't know who the best is. You can say they have the most five stars, or, you know, or they've beaten the most Power Five opponents, or what have you. But you can't say, you know, men can't sit in a room and say, oh, they're the best team. If all we're trying to do is choose the best team for a national championship, then we just need to go back to what Sam said and go back to the OAP poll and let them just, because right now, all the Alabama fans would say, well, just anoint the Crimson Tide national champions because we are the best team. And they will feel that way no matter what happens against Oklahoma. And if they get by Oklahoma, they'll feel that way no matter what happens against Clemson or Notre Dame.
You know, you go back and look, and certainly, you know, if you – and I feel, I sense this, is that we're taking on a flavor somewhere close to the NFL. And I use that to say – that's why teams, and I always use this example, when Eli first got, right after he'd been with the Giants, they were 8-8, got in the playoffs, won the Super Bowl. I think it's defined as a team that's playing the best right now, as opposed to who the best team is.
Right. I agree with you there. And you look at Alabama, and you can you say Alabama, of the teams that you saw on Championship Saturday, that they had that overall they played the best? I mean,
no,
yeah,
they won.
They won. That's exactly right. You know, they won. And you look and say, well, you know, playing the best. Well, you know, Central Florida, of course, they were up against a Memphis team that they had just squeaked out a victory up in Memphis a few weeks ago. But, you know, they fell so far behind, and everyone's and I'm listening to on my Twitter feed and on my Facebook feed saying, yeah, see, Central Florida, they're exposed for who they are. They can't even beat Memphis. And then they came back and they took control of the game, and that told me a lot about that Central Golden Knight team right there.
Oh, Lord, are you saying they've got a chance?
Against LSU? When you're 25-0, and Max, I think you'll agree with me on this. If you've won 25 games in a row, I don't care if you're out in the backyard playing with your little brothers and cousins, 25 in a row, you just don't dismiss that. I don't care who you're playing, 25-0 at any level is a phenomenal record. And until I see 25-1 or 26-1 or 27-1, whatever it ends up being, Central Florida is going to have my respect.
Boach, as always, we thank you so much for your time today. And that gives us a little more insight of you becoming an odds maker. I think you're on the road right now, and we're gonna cast our vote for you.
I'm trying to earn my merit badges every week. That's all I'm trying to do, guys.
Hey, Boji, I'll throw it there to you. Along with that, I just saw an article pop up on ESPN. The American Sports Journal put out their annual list of most influential sports individuals and entities this year, and the American sports gambler was named the most influential sports person of the year over Roger Goodell and Adam Silver, the commissioners of the NFL and NBA, respectively. So odds makers are getting the respect, so it's not a bad time to switch.
Hey, I'm telling you right now, I could be the first one to go over to the dark side, no doubt about it.
I'll hold my comments on that, my friend. I've been down that road before.
That's so, right.
Hey, Bo, enjoy yourself. Have a very Merry Christmas, and we'll probably talk another week or so.
Sounds great, Max. See you, Sam. Y'all take care.
All right, see you, Boji.
Bye.